Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network.
You're like me? What do you know about me, kid? You think this is a choice? Podcasting like this is a lifestyle? Is that what you think? Kid, this is a sentence. Hello, geekologists, and welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. I am Andy Walsh. I am joined by Evan Garcia, and we're here to talk once again about Spider-Man Brand New Day. I finally got a chance to see it, and I have some thoughts, and Evan had some more thoughts, so we're going to have a conversation, and we're happy to have you joining us. Howdy, Evan. How are you doing this evening?
Doing good, man. Just excited to talk Spider-Man and a film that I don't really like, but I like a lot. I'm weirdly kind of in that tension, but I've seen it three times, so it's like, it's weird.
Weird. Yeah, I can see where even if it doesn't go where you want it to go or do what you want it to do, there's a lot to unpack in this film and a lot to talk about, and hopefully we'll get to some of those things.
Cool.
But before we do that, what are you geeking out on? We'll do a little lightning quick. Geeking out on here.
Yeah, I was doing The Ninth Jedi came out. A series that is the anime, the Star Wars anime. The whole series came out. Wonderful series. To me, that's when a Star Wars gets very philosophical with the right and the wrong. That's my kind of Star Wars, and it did it in spades. It was beautiful. It was great. It covered how I view about nihilism and existentialism, and it was able to throw in some Jedi, and oh man, pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff.
Awesome. I haven't had a chance to check that out yet, but I've heard nothing but very positive reaction so far. So I'm looking forward to having a chance to sitting down with that one.
Nice.
I've been, as one might imagine, I've been geeking out on the X-Men 97 show.
Oh, yeah,
season same. 2.
Yeah.
Just had the season finale yesterday. And we won't get into that too much now. We'll save that. I think we talked about having a separate episode to wrap that up. And hopefully
that would be great.
The next 72 hours, we'll get some more X-Men news.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And yeah. So hopefully we'll have both of those things to talk about, and maybe some more X-Men things, and who knows what other kind of goodies. Maybe there'll be some other things out of D23. Could be more Star Wars stuff, or who knows.
But yeah, so we don't know.
Yeah, we don't exactly. So we're geeking out about the future possibilities that are open to us.
Perfect.
Excellent. So. Yeah, thanks everybody again for joining us. We are always happy to have folks listening to us go really deep on what we're excited about, like Spider-Man. And so if you want to rate and review us, if you want to like this video, whatever you can do to boost us so that other people get to share in these conversations as well. You can also actually share them, right? You can repost them on social media, tell a friend. Send them a link, whatever you need to do to help people know what you're geeking out about with us. And you can also support us financially. You'll find a link to that in the show notes or the description of the video or wherever, however you are watching and or listening to this, you'll find those details. You can follow that link. and become a financial supporter, like Jeannie Mattingly, who has been a supporter of us for a while, and we are very appreciative of her support, and thank you for that. And so if you sign up and send a little money our way on a one-time basis or on a regular basis, you can get your own shout out as well. And you'll get access to the website, and there'll be extra content there that as a member you'll have access to. You'll be able to vote in polls about some of the things that we cover. You can go to the comic book channel and ask us to cover a comic book in a future episode of Comic Book Catch-Up. All kinds of good stuff. So please think about doing that as well. And thank you to everyone who does or will do that. We really appreciate it. It helps to make all this stuff possible in terms of hosting and all that kind of logistical stuff. It helps to make the those things aren't all free, the software to record and the hosting and all. So we appreciate that you're helping us to get things out there. So and there'll be a bonus question for this episode that you can look forward to. If you are one of those folks who has access to the bonus content, preloaded this. This is kind of an off the cuff episode, but I will, give Evan a little bit of time to think about it and give you listeners a tease as to what to expect. The bonus question will be, what other MCU movie would have been improved with the addition of a secret, mutant X-Men character?
Oh, that is a great question.
So you can look forward to our answers to that, and we can look forward to coming up with those answers and then talking about them.
Ba-dum-tsh.
So with that, we can go ahead and start talking in more detail about Spider-Man Brand New Day. I suppose perhaps it already feels that way, but definitely from this point forward, there will be some spoilers. We'll be talking about everything that goes on in the film, thematically and plot-wise and so forth. So if you haven't yet seen the film, please feel free to do so. But hopefully by now you've had a chance, since lots of people have seen it. And also, if you haven't, I pity you, I sympathize with your need to avoid spoilers and the difficulties in doing so. I don't really know why they kept some of the secrets about this movie that they did, but they did. Mm-hmm. And now those secrets are pretty widely around. Mm-hmm. So apologies if you were trying to avoid those and either we or someone else revealed them to you before you saw the film. But anyway,
it's boiling time.
Yes, let's talk about Spider-Man Brand New Day. I've been rambling a little bit, but since I haven't had a chance to talk about this film, I'm going to assert my host one privilege and ramble a little bit more how much I enjoyed this film, at the high points. First of all, we've got Destin Daniel Cretton's name on there as the director. I absolutely think that Marvel and Sony should do whatever they need to do to stay in the Destin Daniel Cretton business. This was such a cinematic Spider-Man movie in a way that and had such a feel for, Spider-Man as the superhero of Manhattan and what makes that distinctive, and the flair of just swinging around the city.
Nice.
I think the previous films perhaps intentionally didn't fully explore, and that may have been a deliberate choice rather than just a limitation or, lack of vision or whatever. I think they were trying to kind of really highlight the parochial nature of Spider-Man and Peter Parker as high school students, or as one high school student. Man. But now Spider-Man is an adult and a man of the world and the galaxy, right? He's been to space. And so Manhattan is his playground now, and not just, his neighborhood in Queens.
Is that a band?
So just visually there was a lot going on that was fabulous. The action which was blessed on set by the visit of Jackie Chan himself with former or current members. Not exactly sure how it breaks down, but folks from the Jackie Chan stunt team helped to coordinate with the action, and that really shone through. There were some excellent action set pieces, Spider-Man doing things that only a spider can, or only a Spider-Man can. So that was just really fun to see. And then, the movie has some real heart and some real ideas in its mind, and, is a surprise, but maybe not so much of a surprise, a secret X-Men film as well. And
snuck it in there,
as much as I have been kind of wishing and hoping that, let's just, work on the multiverse saga and the Avengers, and then we'll get to the X-Men and do the X-Men proper and kind of like have them be their own thing or kind of get a fresh slate there. The reality is that X-Men have kind of been seeping into the MCU for a while now. We had Kamala Khan reveal that she's a mutant with the X-Men animated show theme song in the background.
That was cool.
Which was a nice little nod. We've had, you know, Wolverine and Deadpool, or Deadpool and Wolverine as a film with a Fox X-Men character is coming in, and you know, hypothetical X-Men character Channing Tatum as Gambit, you know, finally making an appearance. And you know, we've had other
Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, Multiverse of Madness brought in Patrick Stewart. The Marvels took us to the Fox universe or some other universe with a similar history with Kelsey Grammer's Beast. So, you know, yeah, it's not been a clean break. It's not been a fresh start. It is, you know, we're just kind of working them in here as we can and where we want to. And this was the biggest of that so far, in with newly cast Jean Grey, Sadie Sink, serving as the antagonist for much of the film. And I was nervous for, as an X-Men fan, I was nervous for about the first hour. I don't know. I was looking at my watch.
Did you know that she was going to be Jean?
You know, I knew the same way that everybody else knew that, it was heavily rumored, you know, that they cast a redhead in a role that they weren't specifying, right? You don't cast Sadie Sink for a 3-minute cameo as, you know, character that, appeared in 3 issues or whatever. You cast Sadie Sink because you have big plans for this role in this film and possibly, you know, down the road. And so, and being reductive, right? If Sadie Sink has red hair, so it must be a red hair character. I didn't necessarily buy into that, but also, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, if it wasn't, you know, the whole Mary Jane thing, like that never really made sense to me.
I remember that. Yeah,
I think that would be a huge disservice to Zendaya and to the character development that they've been doing. That, you know, just because her name technically isn't Mary Jane Watson, it's Michelle Jones, right? That the idea that you could sneak in another MJ, I think would just have been confusing. So, you know, of the names that have been floated around as fan theories / rumors / whatever, you know, Jean Grey was the one that made the most sense, even though Jean Grey in a Spider-Man movie, what would that be like? But yeah, so I didn't know going into the film, but it was not a surprise, right? That was kind of the most likely scenario.
Hey guys, Christian here. Have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Well, we've made it a lot easier for you by going to Fourth Wall. Instead of what we've done in the past, Fourth Wall makes everything very easy for everyone involved. Everything is in the same spot. So if you want to find a way to become a member and get access to our exclusive memberships and all the giveaways that we're going to be doing, Fourth Wall is the way to go. As well, if you want to see all the extra episodes and content that we only put to our members, that's the best way to go. Feel free to rate and review us there. You can also leave a donation or tip if that's something you're interested in. And as well, you can help support our All Reading Counts initiative that we do. All the donations that go to that go to our libraries. You also, if you really want to, it's like, man, I really want to hear more episodes about Christian for some reason, or even for even reasons I don't understand, you want to hear Joshua more often. We have episodes listed by host, and you can see everyone there. If you have a favorite host, head that way and support the episodes that they're on. You also find a link to our YouTube page, and we may be adding some special content beyond what we've promised. Everything that was once in multiple different locations and you didn't know where to go, well, it's all in that one convenient place. If you want to know exactly where to go, the link to this will be in the description below.
But man, I was just like, why are we introducing Jean Grey as the villain? Is she working with the Scorpion? Is she involved in organized crime in the Marvel Universe? Like, what's going on here? This is not how I want my X-Men to make their debut in the MCU. But as soon as they revealed that everything she was doing was to get her sister back, and as an X-Men nerd, you know, as soon as the name Sarah came up, you know, I knew that was the name of her sister.
So I wanted to ask you because to me that was a real deep pull. I was like, okay, I did not know that one. That was cool.
Yeah, you could read hundreds of issues of X-Men comics and never encounter Sarah Grey as a name or a person on panel. She appeared, I don't have an exact count, but you know, she appeared in a handful of issues. I think has been name checked more often than actually drawn on panel. Because she, you know, she disappeared. And so, you know, that,
sure,
that, the trauma of that, the weight of that was something that loomed sometimes over Jean, more than her actual presence, as a character on the page, was really a factor. So, yeah, so it was a deep cut, but she recently made, probably her most significant appearance in the Jean Grey, ongoing title, that was, published last year or 2 years ago. There was a Jean Grey comic, and a big arc in that was the return of Sarah Grey, and was it really Sarah Grey, and what's her whole situation? So she was fresh in the minds of current X-Men readers, but So once it became apparent that Jean was looking for her sister who had been kidnapped by Damage Control, then it all clicked. And okay, yeah, you don't come between Jean and her sister. Whether it's her biological sister or her X-Men sisters, you know, that made total sense. And so, and then the way that it unfolded, and, you know, that Spider-Man realizes that there, you know, there's been an error and works with her so that, you know, they were no longer at odds. You know, that's a classic, that's a classic comic book trope, right? The heroes have a misunderstanding, they're at odds, and then they work together to resolve the issue.
Yeah.
So yeah, in the end, I was very pleased with how, the Jean Grey and X-Men of it all was handled. So.
Yeah, the guys, Christian and Kevin and I made some slides of it and some reels for it, but they really covered that part right. Like, they did a great job in not sacrificing the Spider-Man to bring in the X-Men. So yeah,
the way that, you know, Spider-Man served the role of kind of the healing force of the Marvel Universe, the hug that everybody needs, shining light of optimism that everybody needs. You know, that's a good role for Peter Parker to play. And
right,
you know, when they did the recent Marvel DC crossover comics, they paired up Superman and Spider-Man to kind of compare how they serve similar roles in their respective universes, and that's a big part of it. And I think that's spot on, that both of them are kind of the, you know, when you're having a bad day, when all else seems dark and grim, they'll be the one to provide a smile or a ray of hope. And so I thought it was perfect to have that kind of be the way that Peter influenced Jean Grey in this film.
That was one of my hangups with it, because I was expecting the brand new day to be what we got after this movie, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that we would already be in the brand new day. I realized what the movie was doing. I'm like, oh, we're not quite there yet. So I kind of related to the people that had kind of the same argument with the first season of Ahsoka. They said, we have already learned all this stuff. Why can't we go to the version of Ahsoka that we want to see? And I said, no, you first kind of need this this moment to get to that day. But that being said, what do you think about the cameos and the other characters in it too?
Yeah, so. You know, Florence Pugh, always a delight. You know, that Yelena character.
Potatoes. Just
small potatoes. You know, perhaps not the best judge of the magnitude of potatoes, but otherwise an entertaining presence. Always happy to see her turn up. You know, to me, that's the secret sauce that I think has been missing from a lot of the multiverse saga films is the way that a character that you love from another film can, or TV show or whatever, can show up for 5 minutes, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, in the case of, you know, Steve Rogers and Thor: The Dark World, like 10 seconds, right? That little Loki turns into Captain America for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, just those little things that remind you that these are connected stories, and also that keep these characters fresh in your mind and give the audience opportunities to fall in love with these characters more or again, or for the first time.
Yeah.
right? Yeah. I think that's true. What people have been missing from these MCU movies, and why, you know, the even as good as this film was, you know, the Avengers Doomsday of it all is a bit like, well, are we excited for this movie or not? Because
right.
there are so many characters that are going to appear in that film that we haven't spent that much time with recently or at all.
It just hit me that it's kind of ironic that we had a whole saga, a whole phase dedicated to the possibilities of the multiverse, yet we still haven't seen characters for like 5-6 years. It's like, how did that go? Like, who said, who, like, I want to know who was the person that said that they can't put Shang-Chi in something. It's like, that's insane.
Right. Exactly. that's exactly the kind of thing that, you know, your Shang-Chis, yeah. your She-Hulks, your
She-Hulk,
you know, Ms. Marvel.
She-Hulk would have been great.
You know, should be popping up.
Hulk's son.
Hulk, yeah. You know, RIP, you know, Scar, Hercules. Yeah. Clear.
Hercules, I forgot. Yes,
all of
oh yeah, Clear.
All of these characters that appeared only
in Russell Crowe as Zeus, even like
yeah.
you have freaking Russell Crowe.
Yep, yep. All these characters that you know were promised, teased in post credit scenes that so far haven't materialized, and who knows if they ever will.
What was his name? The Star Fox.
Yep, Harry Styles is Star Fox, and Patton Oswalt is Pip the Troll.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Pip the Troll. So they just announced that they're doing a Marvel Star Wars crossover.
Yes.
And I proposed a joke online, and I took Patton Oswalt's character or characters from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the twins.
Yeah, yeah.
And I named one of them Philly and the other one Buster for Filibuster.
Okay.
So, but do you get that reference?
Yeah, from Parks and Rec. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I was like, come on, this is a perfect opportunity.
Yes, that's a clever pull because yeah, that's all about the Star Wars Marvel crossover. Yeah. So all those characters, you know, and some of that is, you know, plans changing and whatever. Some of the, I would not be surprised if some of that was still the COVID of it all, that, you know, you needed to limit your casts and limit things because people had to isolate. And, you know, I don't know all that went into those protocols, but it seemed like it, you know, especially in those first couple of years, 2021, 2022, you know, filming had to look very differently. And so maybe bringing in an actor for, you know, 3 minutes of screen time just didn't make a whole lot of sense because of
the
behind the scenes logistics.
Yeah. But that being said, what did you like of the ones that we did get?
But yeah, so I, right. Yelena was a lot of fun. Hulk, was, you know, I think it was a little bit less of an opportunity for the Hulk to shine. I really enjoyed, Professor Hulk, the smart Hulk, from Endgame. And
I wasn't mad about him. Yeah, he was cool.
I'm a little disappointed that we haven't seen more of that version of the Hulk. That, you know, we've kind of gone, you know, in She-Hulk, we saw a lot of Banner, which, you know,
right.
Mark Ruffalo is charming as Banner. But I did appreciate the smart Hulk, the Professor Hulk of it all. And then, you know, here we're kind of back to, you know, they're at, you know, Hulk and Banner are at odds with each other and all. And, you know, maybe some of that is, you know, Jean Grey messing with his mind,
as he
kind of says, right? So it makes sense story-wise, but I still, you know, we didn't really get to see, I think, that character shine in the same way that, you know, Yelena really gets to shine.
Right.
And then, you know, the Punisher, I guess also, you know, partly it's the Hawkeye thing from Avengers, right? He spends a lot of his time on screen, not really himself.
Right. True. But,
yeah. And then the Punisher, you know, that was, I think, my favorite incarnation of John Bernthal's Punisher that we've seen, because I'm not a huge fan of the Punisher, and I'm not a huge fan of the grim, dark, have to murder everybody
Punisher
kind of vibe of the Punisher. I think I think he works best in this kind of mode as a foil for other characters, as a contrast to other heroes in the Marvel universe to remind us, you know, what makes them heroic, to remind us of the sacrifices and the challenges of taking the path that Spider-Man and Daredevil and some of these other guys choose to take.
He's he's a living, breathing cautionary tale, basically.
Yes. And so I thought that worked very well. And you know, because he's a charismatic actor, you know, he was charming and a lot of fun.
Let me tell you something.
In this film, I felt bad. My daughter afterwards, she's like, "No, I need to go and watch that Punisher special and all." Like, I really like the Punisher. Mm-hmm. And this is like, that's fine, and you can watch those things. But let me warn you that that is not exactly the same. It's the same character, but it's not the same vibes, right? He's not not quite as charming, especially in the One Last Kill episode.
Yeah,
but yeah. So I thought, I'm trying to think. I guess Metzger from Damage Control also counts as a cameo, as a named entity, but
yes,
not one right. I'm super familiar with. So
the Damage Control, they are kind of their own kind of cameo, because I didn't realize that they went far back as the first Tom Holland Spider-Man,
right?
And probably before that, I was like, oh wow, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, you know, Tyne Daly in the first film represents Damage Control. And I think at one point there was a notion of doing like a Damage Control sitcom or something.
Really cool.
But that never materialized. But it is interesting that none of them have, we've had three different Damage Control representatives. I don't think Damage Control really shows up in Far From Home. But we had that one guy in No Way Home. I forget the actor's name or the character's name.
He's from the show with a William Stryker in it, where he's the businessman.
Right, Succession.
Succession. There you go.
Yes.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah. So he was in No Way Home, and then we had Jermell in this film. So that, you know, I that's maybe a little bit of a missed opportunity.
He's from
Severance.
Severance. Yeah. From all those memes.
Yes.
Film dancing.
Yes. Yeah, so that you know, that does hurt the continuity a little bit of remembering that, you know, that they've been kind of a constant thorn in Spider-Man's side.
Yeah.
But you know, it's still cool that there is that element that kind of connects all these films. And DeWolf, Detective DeWolf, is also a character from the comics.
Yes, yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Creation of
a fun presence.
Yeah. Yeah, she added a lot to the film. Creation of Peter David, one of my favorite comic writers, who passed away.
Heck yeah.
Not that long ago. So it was nice to see him. Nice to see him, you know, in that list of special thanks at the end.
Heck yeah.
And nice to see one of his creations on screen. I don't know how, you know, a similar character, you know, she appeared in a very different story. So it's, you know, not exactly.
Christian was saying that. Yeah.
Not exactly a one-to-one mapping, but still, you know, if you got to have a detective character, right, use one that exists on the page rather than inventing something new, so that, you know, the comic book creators get their moment of recognition.
She was very, she felt very Commissioner Gordon or like a Detective Gordon.
Yes. Yeah. And the Spider-Man Sony PlayStation games have a different police character, and I'm blanking on the name, but who plays a very similar role in Spider-Man's life in that game, of kind of calling him with tips and asking for his help and so forth. So it was that kind of dynamic, but a different name to the character.
What did you think of the surveillance aspect of it, and how she comments, "Hey, that sounds illegal," and Peter Parker just kind of goes, "Yeah, probably." I'm like, "Bro, what?"
Yeah, that might be the part of the film that sat
that was weird,
the worst with me, and part of why, you know, especially was nervous going in, like, well, if we're ruining Jean Grey and we're ruining Spider-Man by making him this, you know, master of a surveillance system or whatever, like, I'm not sure where this is going.
Where are we going with this?
Yeah. And I'm not thrilled that was more kind of a joke and didn't really deal with the consequences of that or the implications of that. And, you know, and especially thinking about, you know, it was 16 years ago, we had The Dark Knight pull that pull that bit. And
that's true.
You know, at least acknowledge, right, that this is probably not a good idea. This is too much power.
We did not learn.
One person to have. Learn. And so burned it down at the end. So I'm not sure that justified Batman's usage of it in that film, but at least acknowledged that there are issues here. There are problems that you know, that this is not just an unalloyed good. And so, to have Peter and not really second guess it. Maybe they'll develop that further in future films.
One thing I do want to see them developed is the fact that he is building the technology that's going to control the X-Men that the ODC has now. He's like, I want to see a Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer Spider-Man film now.
I mean, you definitely could do that. Or they could, they could drop that and it'll never get mentioned again, right? That there was just that one prototype and it got smashed and now it no longer exists. But I mean, that's certainly a big theme that recurs in the X-Men comics is
Sentinels.
Can you control mutant powers? Can you suppress mutant powers? Can you get rid of mutant powers? We obviously saw that in X-Men: The Last Stand, possibly. I don't think any of the other films have a cure storyline or anything like that. But there's other notions of inhibiting powers and the Sentinels and all that. So they could be planting some seeds there that will be picked up in the X-Men film. I mean, that could be that could easily be the plot of the X-Men movie whenever we get that with Jake Schreier. Or like I said, it could never get mentioned again. And I'm okay either way. I don't love that it's something that Peter Parker made, but he clearly comes to realize that maybe it wasn't such a good idea, either for himself or for other people. And so, that kind of fits in the comic books that role goes to Forge. Forge makes a gun in the 80s that if you zap somebody with the gun, it takes away their mutant powers.
Nice.
And he kind of has to live with realizing that he made this thing and what it could be used for, and kind of has an Oppenheimer storyline of I did it because I wanted to see if I could do it and didn't necessarily it's not my department to decide how it gets used, but it should have been. So
I kind of want to see I want to see Forge, Mr. Fantastic, and a Doctor Doom kind of blue sky something, like I want them to team up almost. Okay. That would be something.
That
I think there's something there.
I like it. I'm not mad at that idea.
Well, cool.
Thank you all so much for your time listening to this episode. If you want to help sponsor our show, but you can't quite do the membership thing, commit to that once a month payment, good news, you can leave a donation on our Fourth Wall website. You also can get some free content over there. So if you don't have the money for the membership, but you still want to hear some of the extras and bonuses we do over on Fourth Wall, there's an option for that. If you want to support the show without that commitment every month, again, you can donate over there. Every little bit helps. Our show has a lot of needs when it comes to equipment, when it comes to going to some of the events we want to go to, advertising, getting the word out about our show. It takes a lot, and we really appreciate each and every person who's able to help us do it, even if it's something free, just like the free membership or leaving a rate and review on our site. Every little bit helps. Your time listening to this helps, and we appreciate all of you. We're so proud of the community we formed over at Systematic Ecology, and we're very happy and we're proud that you're a part of it. Thank you so much for your time and for being a part of this community.
So you wanted to talk about the process theology of this film, or your thoughts about how process theology relates to this film. So I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about that. So
sure, it's my understanding of process philosophy, which is still pretty basic, but it was pretty weird because confirmation bias works in a very mysterious way sometimes, because just a few days before watching the movie, I'm listening to a podcast with a friend of the show, Josh Patterson, and a process theology is if if you know, you can kind of correct me on this, but it is based kind of on the idea that everything is in relation to something else. We cannot live in a, complete isolation, like the sky is only blue because of the particles in the air that are refracting with the light and stuff like that. And like things are relational, and that aspect of process philosophy blends into the theology side of it. And that's what hooked me in when it was kind of the linchpin where I decided, oh, I can still be a Christian and still have these non-objective kind of thoughts. And because of because on the podcast that I was listening to with Josh, I remember him describing and a feeling that I had growing up. I had the feeling that I could never read my Bible properly, and the shame mechanism that came from that, because I could never just go by myself and kind of read something and process it for me, quote unquote. So I've always had that kind of lingering, and through my deconstruction, I found out that I probably have some HDHD tendencies, and so that kind of explained the physical side of why I might feel that. But what process helped was, it made me feel okay with the fact that I can be, that I don't see things, that I rely on the relationship of others to see my worldview. And seeing a Spider-Man kind of through some certain ways, learn that lesson that you can't just do things by yourself. You have to have your a community, and have that tension of the other person. So I just found that connection to it of the relativity side of things, and that it just was it's just a sense of validation that I was like, huh. I was not expecting that from a Spider-Man film. So, but that was about it.
Cool. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was sure. I had no idea where you were going to go with this. So, I was excited, and that makes a lot of sense. The idea.
Right,
yeah. So, right. You know, spelling it out a little bit more, right. In the follow-up, in the aftermath of Spider-Man No Way Home, where Doctor Strange has to use magic to make everybody forget. Everybody forget that Peter Parker existed. I'm a little bit fuzzy on actually what was erased from the world, but certainly the fact that Peter Parker and Spider-Man were the same person, you know, everybody who knew that forgot that, and in the process seemed to have forgotten their history with Peter Parker. And so, as this film opens, he is very much just trying to do everything on his own, avoiding all kinds of interactions with anybody that he had previously had a relationship with. I think
to try to keep them safe, which is, that's a honorable thing to do, but that can get kind of messy too.
Yes. As the film unfolds, and you know, and as Jean Grey, as he learns that Jean Grey is dealing with her own, you know, issues of isolation and abandonment and so forth, they kind of both help each other to figure out that it's okay to need people in your life, and that part of what defines us, like you said, is our relationship to everything else around us and everyone else around us. Mm. That's a really good observation. I think there's also an element, my experience with process theology kind of comes indirectly through learning some things about open and relational theology.
Right. Same.
With, other friend of the podcast, Thomas J. Ord, who, we was on an episode about the film Minority Report talking about these topics.
And, great episode.
I think there's also some element there of the idea that Spider-Man is not a finished product, right? There is not some essential essence to Spider-Man that once he got bit by that spider, he's become that thing, and he will just always be, that essential Spider-Man mm-hmm. thing, but that there's an unfolding to his Spider-Man-ness as well. And, this film, by kind of relating it to the developmental stages of spiders and other arachnids,
right.
And that they, they molt right. and they go through transformations in their life, right? That we become different people over time, and that becoming is in some ways just as essential, or not more essential than our properties or our features. Sometimes I kind of think of it in terms, what does all this process and relational and openness kind of boil down to? And I think it's an emphasis that verbs are just as important as nouns, at least.
Right? Yeah.
Becoming is mm-hmm. is really what things are about as much as being something.
Yeah.
So that's
what the on hyphen is in Spider-Man.
Right. Yes. It leaves a little space for mm-hmm. growth, for change. That's a fun thought to about that. And hopefully it'll help us to remember that there is a hyphen in Spider-Man.
Yes. 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 That is one of my favorite things to do on social media is I don't even post something. I just go to make a post, and I do the hashtags, and how they try to autocorrect for you, and sometimes I like to misspell it and see who else has also misspelled it for me. It's so much fun to see all the weird spellings people put for Star Wars and for Spider-Man and stuff.
Cool.
That's the process part that I felt like I could add to it.
Very good. Were there other thoughts about the film that you wanted to talk about, or anything else that you think we need to get into?
I saw some video at a con that Rosario Dawson had a deleted scene where she was the one that kept his secret safe at the hospital, Peter Parker. And she was the one that was with the suit and stuff like that. I was like, oh, that's all right. That would have been clever.
Yeah. That would have made a lot of sense and would have been a nice mm-hmm. nod to the reintegration of the Netflix side of the world.
Yeah.
But there was a lot going on in this movie. I can see where that maybe, I can see why somebody might have decided that was one too many characters and elements to add.
Two hours and like 20 minutes this movie was, I think.
If not more than that.
Yeah.
And a lot of, a lot of characters, a lot of faces to keep track of. Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. With everything that I've talked about this film so much with people all online and stuff, but I still can't get over the fact that it's just so boring. This movie, I could feel the 2 hours, man. I just can't. The film commits the one sin that I can't get over, apparently.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
It's just so boring. It's just like, I know what's happening, and that's okay because I like Spider-Man and I love all the characters, and it's just like grinding fingernails on Mount Vesuvius. Like, what is happening? On my third viewing, it took everything in me to not pull out my phone to do the slides for the recording that I was going to do the next day. I was just like, man.
Well,
it kind of sucks, but
yeah, I'm sorry that was your experience. I was dialed in. I was really hooked.
And, right on.
Part of that may have been just like the anxiety over Jean Grey. And then once mm-hmm. I was bought into what they were doing, just like the excitement of, oh, okay, here we go now. Like it's
sure.
You know, but yeah, I can see if you were bored by the film, then yeah, it was a lot of film to be bored by.
It was a lot. And seen it 3 times.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
Sure. One more thing that I wanted to flag, thinking Sorry. About the, you know, the element of Spider-Man being on his own and then reconnecting with folks. Michael Giacchino, who did the score for this film and all the previous Tom Holland Spider-Man films.
Right, right.
It's maybe a little bit obvious once you hear it described, but it's also, you know, lots of things are, but coming up with them and executing them is the challenge. So he took the theme that he had created for Spider-Man for the earlier films, and he removed notes from it. When the theme is first revisited at the beginning of the film, it's down to like basically 4 notes, and you can still recognize it as the Spider-Man theme. And, you know, if you're not looking for it, not paying attention, really? You may not register. But yeah, there are fewer notes in the Spider-Man theme. And
because he's not really Spider-Man.
And it stays that way.
He's missing a part.
Until the very end, when there's a shot where he's kind of monologuing about, you know, that he's not going to do it anymore. I think he's talking to Aunt May in his mind. How he's not going to try to go it alone anymore. And we see a shot of MJ and we hear the theme with some more of the notes added back. And then they go and have the handshake moment with Ned.
That's cool.
In the corner store. And again, we hear the theme with all of the notes restored. And I just thought that was a nice little musical flourish that.
Oh man, added. That's beautiful. That's beautiful on so many levels, because I remember having anxiety that he was doing the music for a Rogue One, because I was like, how dare he?
Oh yeah.
And that's not John Williams, and he pulled it off, man. Like, it was so good. And here, I love to hear that kind of heartfelt technicality is brought into it as well, because it's just as part of the filmmaking as the gaffer or whatnot.
Yeah,
but that's cool.
All right, and with that, we will wrap things up. Reminder again that we will have an extra question for this episode that will be about adding which previous MCU film could be improved by the addition of a secret X-Men character. Do we have anything to recommend to the good folks as a result of this episode?
I've been saying it the past few times, and the listeners are probably going to be bored, but The Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, it's just a fun show. And I'm milking that show as much as I can, because it's fun.
Awesome. And the tombstone from that show gets a 3-second cameo.
That's right.
The same actor.
That's right.
Which was a fun.
And the actor that played Tombstone in Brand New Day played him in one of the Spider-Verse films. I don't know which one.
Yeah, I think it's the first Spider-Verse film.
And, the first one? Okay.
And the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man cartoon.
That is so much fun.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I will say if you're looking for some more Jean Grey material, X-Men Red would be the like 12-issue series by Tom Taylor. And I apologize, the artist is not coming to mind right now. But a 12-issue series about a team led by Jean Grey. I think one of my favorite Jean Grey focused stories, you know, that isn't The Dark Phoenix. If you're looking for something with a little bit more lightness to it, that's right. A good one. So check those things out. Please, again, remember to rate, review the show wherever that's possible. And thank you again to Jeannie Mattingly and everyone who supports us and makes it possible to do the show. You can become a member yourself. Find the link in the show notes, the show description, the video description, somewhere. You'll find a link to the site where you can go and sign up and get access to our bonus question, all of our other bonus material, and lots of other goodies as well. And hopefully we'll come back with, we'll be back next time with something else to talk about other than Spider-Man Brand New Day, although I'm sure that there's things still left unsaid. But until that time, remember, if you're going to geek, do it systematically.
Easy.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. I have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decided to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording, like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in? Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology? All right, guys. See ya.
This is Joshua Knoll. I am one of the hosts of this podcast. I also host a few other shows on the Anazal Podcast Network that this show is a part of. If you want to hear more from me, you can check out the Whole Church Podcast, where TJ and I go through talking to people from various different church traditions to see what can be done to better harness church unity in the world today. You can also hear me on Be Living Water, where I talk about Taoist Christian beliefs and examine various media like the Book of Daniel and Les Miserables through a Taoist Christian perspective. You can also hear me as I do some of the voice work for the Bible After Hours, where the foul-mouthed preacher goes through the Bible from a more progressive point of view. Thank you guys for listening, and I hope you'll consider checking out these other shows on the Anazal Podcast Network.